Welcome to Wild Connection, the podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Jennifer Vertelin. I'm a scientist and author that studies animal behavior. I'm passionate about animals, and I love helping people reconnect with nature to live better lives. This podcast is about you, other animals, and how we're all connected in this wild and crazy thing called life. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Wild Connection, the podcast. My Fulbright series, Voices of Uganda, continues this week with Paul Muheza. Last episode featured Apafia Asimwe, a local bird guide, and Paul is someone that has worked on behalf of the Buhoma community, has seen the community grow and change, and seen how it has benefited as a result of tourism. He's on the board of the Buhoma Community Development Association, and he's the general manager for two lodges, one of which is Haven Lodge. All right, everybody, welcome back to Wild Connection, the podcast. Welcome to the show, Paul.
It's my pleasure.
Yes, I'm so excited. You know, I've gotten to know you over my 8 months here. And you have rescued me several times in many different ways. And part of that is also tied to, you're not rescuing the community so much as uplifting the community that you're from. Can you talk a little bit about where you're from?
I'm Paul Muheza, a native of Buhoma, just adjacent to Windi National Park. I've worked with the tourism industry for the last 25 years. Currently, I'm working as a general manager for Buhoma Community Development Association. This is an NGO that works with the entire Buhoma Town Council. And basically, why it was formed after the formation of the national park, people were benefiting from this national park in terms of resource utilization, like firewood, medicine, hunting, mining, name them. So people thought of alternative, the way how can protect the natural resource and the gorillas. So basically, the resources that they are getting now, we have to look at what can they benefit. One, we looked at education. Then we looked at the water. We looked at the women empowerment in terms of capacity building, in terms of craft selling, marketing, and basically the education. We are looking at scholarships, building schools where the vulnerable kids for people in the entire could come and study at a lower cost. Then people here had the dirty water. So, and the water, basically, most of the diseases come from water. And we had to look at grafted frost scheme, which we have constructed, and it is serving over like 100 households. And then we looked at the nutrition. Basically, people were malnourished, and teaching them how to make gardens, how to feed the children. Also, the literacy here was very high, literacy rate, so people were not educated. And when we started the community schools, people started joining, and they were, when you look at the way when we started and now, the people have come through those schools, there are many. We have a primary school and a community secondary school.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, that's what we are looking at. And also the conservation of our natural resource here. People have forgotten going back to the park. When we talk with the management of park, the illegal activities done here, they are very, very, very minimal compared to other parts where they have no tourism actually. Because tourism began actually here and spread other sectors of the national park. So people here, they have benefited a lot. One, the market for their products has increased and it is accessible, and actually it's little. The produce is little compared to the market demand.
Mm-hmm.
So now employment. Our association employs over 50 people locally from around, and that's a very big basis and a good opportunity for the local people to get employed here, not going to Kampala or Kabale for to look for employment. And the resources, the multiplier effect from the community is much. And people have, actually, we have trained even other local people, and they have gone actually to work in other protected areas. Others have become guides, tourist guides, and they are employing even other people.
Yeah.
Those people who, that we trained locally here as a community association.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, it's incredible all of the things that you and those that you work with have accomplished. And I'm curious, you know, I want to dig into different elements of all of those things that you listed and share more with people what the impact is of those things. But I'm curious, you know, before the park was formed or gazetted into a park, and people were prevented now from going into the park and utilizing those resources, what did you do and what was life like for you?
The life here was not easy and very complicated. The education rate was low. People had raw income. They had no income because they had no, they could not be employed because they were not educated. Food security was not enough. They were producing for home consumption. They would not sell these other surrounding lodges. So there has been actually tremendous change in the lifestyle, in education, and in health. When you look at our hospital here, Bwin Community Hospital, we participated in bringing it here. Because our revenue sharing from the park, we contributed a big chunk on the outpatient department. Because they had no money to roof it, we used our resources to roof that so that we can get health near to the people. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So and there has been a tremendous change in lifestyle of the people of Oklahoma Town Council.
And you've been here through all of that. So you grew up here. And then you've seen all of this change.
Yes, I was born from here. I've seen this park being gazetted. I've seen it grow from zero up to now. I've seen the hospital from scratch up to where it is now with the nursing school.
Yeah.
So these changes have really changed the lifestyle of people because health has come near. Education, we had the, actually for us during our study, we are walking 16 kilometers to and fro every day.
Oh my gosh.
To reach the nearest primary school, but now it's in less than a kilometer. So every kilometer, at least there is a school, which means the accessibility to school by young kids, it's easy, walkable and affordable. And above all, these tourists that come have helped these young kids to give them scholarships. They are being sponsored. You find in a primary of 500, like 300, are sponsored by people who are well-wishers who come to see gorillas. So meaning the park is doing a very tremendous work in terms of education. And people come out and then they do other their personal business. And really, the these gorillas and this national park has made life easy and affordable by the local people from here.
Yeah. Well, and I think what a lot of people don't realize, because the way that education is managed in other countries is very differently, that people have to pay school fees to send their kids to school for primary school, secondary school. Whereas like where I come from in the United States, we don't have to pay for our children to go to school from kindergarten to 12th grade. It's only when you go to university that you start paying, right? And so I think that people don't appreciate until they come here and they find this out. And it's wonderful that they're inspired to
support the education of the next generation, because sure. I think it's so important.
Yeah, very, very, very yeah. much.
So you used to walk 16 kilometers to and from to school.
Yes.
Wow. That takes a lot
yeah.
of dedication.
Sure. And you were young, on barefoot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When did you start, or when did Bwindi Community Association begin? Bohoma
yes.
Community Association.
Bohoma Community Development Association started way back in 1993, June.
Okay, so really right when the park was established.
Yes. It began with four units
mm-hmm.
and a campsite. We started growing slowly, slowly. We added on some tents. We added on a dining,
mm-hmm.
Kitchen. And in 2013, we received a grant from United States Development Foundation
uh-huh.
To fund and build the new hotel up, the Haven Lodge.
Yes.
Which was also one of the greatest achievements, because they saw what we are doing and the impact it had on the people around the park here in Bohoma Town Council,
right.
The people of the United States and the government of Uganda, because it is 50-50.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
Wow. And I've stayed at Haven Lodge
yeah.
when you, one of those times you rescued me. And I can say that it's a wonderful, wonderful place. It's beautiful views, very comfortable. And all of the staff is so friendly and professional. And I just, you know, want people to know what happens if I'm a guest and I stay at that community owned lodge, what does that mean? Like, where do my dollars go?
Oh, that's very great. Once you stay with the community lodges, either at Haven or at Bohoma Community Rest Camp, you are contributing to the development of our community, because all the profits minus these other expenses we meet in the lodges, salaries, improvement of the lodge, the rest of the money, the profits, goes back to community to develop those projects I mentioned before,
yes.
like schools, paying for vulnerable kids mm-hmm. in secondary and primary, then extending like water now that we have a gravity flow, but there are some areas where the water don't reach. So we have worked in partnership even with other partners like International Water Conservation Program to build rainwater harvesting tanks, because some areas are very hilly and gravity water can't reach there.
Right.
Such that they get access to water, because people spend a lot of time in fetching water.
Yeah.
Even kids don't go to school because they are going to fetch water first, then they go out to school very late.
Yeah. So, talk about that. What does that mean for those communities? I mean, what is far, and because you see people walking with yellow jerry cans. And so if you're up in this hilly area where the gravity water can't reach,
then you have to travel like half a kilometer,
okay.
1 kilometer,
right.
go and fetch water. And by the time you reach at home, going back to school, it's too late. You are already late for school, or right. you may not go to school.
Yes.
So if it rains, then it means you are caught up by time.
Yes.
So that's why we are trying to avoid, so that kids have enough time, have no those problem of stopping them from going to school. Instead, we are solving those problems so that kids are free. They make their life easy. Even older people, mm-hmm. instead of going to the gardens to dig, they have to go first to get water, come back, then go to the garden. That's time wasted, and they become very tired.
Yes. Yeah. And it can get hot quick.
Yeah.
And then, or it can rain.
Yeah.
All day. And then you can't be in the garden and you were seeing all that precious water.
Sure.
So rain harvesting mm-hmm. is a really great solution.
Yeah.
So currently, how many families or communities are benefiting from rain harvesting?
Basically, there are more than like 80 families.
Okay.
Yeah, benefiting from those rain harvesting water. Also, on top of that, we have organized women groups, those who make crafts.
Mm-hmm.
Before COVID, we used to market their products, such that they can sell them outside or get them market for them in the lodges around.
Mm-hmm.
So once you look at these, there are some organized groups, but because of COVID, somehow, somewhere they were disintegrated, but we are bringing back on the board. Such that, you know, once they weave a basket, they can bring them in the lodge.
Uh-huh.
We sell and then give them the proceeds.
Yeah.
They are able to buy books, pens, these small items for their kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really incredible. And I sort of want to talk, since you brought up COVID and that some things kind of disintegrated, I imagine that the organization also suffered because tourists couldn't come. And so how were you able to still help the community when you weren't being able to receive that revenue?
During COVID and after COVID, we had some challenges. Definitely demands from communities were high, but there was no source of income. It's just of recent that we are now recovering from that shock. And we are now beginning to go back to the trend where we stopped, and the projects we had started, we are now moving on.
Mm-hmm.
Right, the secondary school was almost collapsing, but now it's back on the trail.
Okay.
Yeah, the women, we are bringing them back or reorganizing them.
Okay.
Such that everything goes back to normal.
Now, what was it about you that led you to be motivated to be a part of this kind of organization?
Basically, as a person,
yes.
I like conservation and gorillas, and I like working for my people. When I see people happy, and I also feel happy, it's to be prudent, go and work for some other people when my people needed me.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel proud working for our community, and I feel happy training other young generations who cope up, who need some money, some work.
You know, and this is one of the things that has inspired me about you, which is seeing how much you contribute to the community. And I know that you're such a well-respected member of this community for all the work that you've done. And I want to talk a little bit about some of the other issues you brought up, which was food security. How much has that improved? And what do you see are still some of the challenges that the community is facing?
The community, the challenge they are facing is our soils are poor. And it would be, they need some fertilizers, manure, such that they can produce for home consumption and extra for sale. So that's the biggest challenge that we have. And we are densely populated.
Yes. I mean, Uganda itself is a small country.
Sure.
Yeah.
So I have to admit that. So we don't have enough chunk of land to plant crops. But on a manageable scale, they have tried to grow vegetables, fruits, and some other foodstuffs that can be consumed by these lodges, the staff at the hospital, people in the park.
Right.
Yeah.
And those of us who are going to cook themselves when they stay a long time.
Yeah.
And I think it surprises people because, you know, okay, you and I, the audience, we are sitting in front of windy, impenetrable forest, looking out at it, and you see all of this vegetation, and people, I think, would be surprised to know that the soils are not so rich in nutrients. And, you know, this is very true of many tropical forests, that the really fertile layer is very, very thin.
Sure.
And it can get depleted very quickly.
Sure.
And so there historically, right, there might have been slash and burn kind of agriculture.
True.
Where you burn a small area,
True.
You grow there, then you move to another area, and that other area then regrows. But once you are reaching a very high population density, it becomes unmanageable.
Sure.
To take that approach. And so now you have to figure out, if I only have a small piece of land,
how do I use it?
Yes.
Sustainably.
Exactly.
And produce something tangible.
Yes. Yeah. And so how does the organization help people either learn or improve the way that they're approaching food growth?
We have done that through organized groups, women groups, the youth, and for the elderly.
Okay.
Yeah. We organize them. There is communal land where they... Have you ever been to Kanyashande, that side? There's a garden there.
Nice
garden for the youth.
Oh, okay. I didn't know.
For ladies, they do it at home in their personal land. But the other one is government land, which they have been using. And I will show you, my phone is charging.
Okay.
They send me good photos of cabbages, lettuce, spinach.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
So what they do is... they bring some manure, they organize themselves, treat the manure, they prepare the land, and then they plant, and they are aiming at the season. Yeah.
So growing seasonal foods.
Basically, in rainy season, that's when they grow vegetables. By the time it is dry, they are ready to harvest. Yeah.
Okay. Well, so it's funny, or not funny, it's interesting. We have community gardens in the United States.
Oh.
Yes, and they popped up because we also have food insecurity,
mm-hmm.
and we have things called food deserts,
mm-hmm.
Where essentially people are living too far
mm-hmm.
from a place to get fresh fruits and vegetables,
mm-hmm.
and they don't have land to grow.
Yeah.
But cities have sort of abandoned land
mm-hmm.
that were not being used. So you have community organizations that come in and have community gardens.
Those gardens. Oh,
exactly.
That's interesting.
It is, right?
Yeah.
And so we've talked about education, we've talked about water, we've talked about food and how the organization has been helping them grow. What do you see as some of the biggest remaining challenges that the organization is focused on, or that you personally see and want to have an impact on?
What I can see now is, with the development, when developments come, they come with some negative or so. What? So people, when they basically what I can see is now, garbage collection has become a serious issue around this place because the littering is too much.
Yeah.
And being in a conservation area and a unique area like this one, we need some intervention on that. That's what I can see now.
Mm-hmm.
Because by educated, once you explain to them, they easily understand. And I'll give you one of the live examples here. I was telling the mayor, when you compare this trading center here and down,
mm-hmm.
when you see the littering,
yeah,
here it's a bit controlled a bit.
Yes.
Compared to home there.
Yes, yes.
If you have been observant. Meaning they know.
Wow.
That's standard. It's normal.
I know.
So that's an intervention the community needs also to get involved in.
Yes.
Because it makes even these polythene, the bottles, they despoil the soil.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And a lot of people burn their plastic waste.
And then it produces those acidic and affects our good fresh air.
Absolutely. And yeah. the air is very fresh.
Yeah.
And you know what's really sad is in the past week, I have found 3 plastic bottles inside Bwindi, the park.
Wow.
On remote trails.
Basically, those might have been from there by either the porters or...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know who, but... Yeah. Right? But we pick them up, of course, mm-hmm. every time mm-hmm. I see when I pick it up. And you and I have talked about this.
Yes.
And I know we have... We have grand secret plans that we hopefully will reveal at a future date on how we're going to solve this problem. But so you bring up a very important environmental problem. And do you see other challenges when you think about the community? Are there any other negatives of tourism? I mean, when you think about it, right, we have 60,000 roughly people that come through here every year.
The prices, you know, I thought every development comes with a negative impact.
Yes.
The prices of food stuff here, because the supply is lower and the demand is high, everything is expensive.
Yes.
Even compared to other towns and cities.
Right?
Yes.
I know. So I paid almost 2,000 shillings for an apple.
Uh-huh.
One little tiny apple.
In Kampala, it's 500.
Right. And I you know, granted, that's less than a dollar, right? Mm-hmm,
yes.
But I was like, oh
my God.
2,000 shillings.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
You look at bananas, yellow bananas, in other places, they are rotting. But here, the demand is high.
I can't get a banana. So, I haven't had a banana in a week.
So here, the prices for goods,
mm-hmm.
especially consumables, they are relatively high compared to other prices.
Yeah.
That's also a negative impact.
Sure. So everything comes with a cost.
Yes.
Well, and you know, one of the things I admire so many things about you, but one of them is how involved you are in the community and with the leadership of the community. And so, you know, how important is that to really making progress on some of these issues?
In terms of what?
Well, because, you know, sometimes well-meaning Muzungu, which here means foreigner, essentially,
yes.
usually white, is we come and we say, oh, we want to change something. We're going to start a not-for-profit and we're going to tell everybody what they need to do without talking to people and asking them what they need and what they want. And so how important do you think really... one of the things I admire is how involved you are, not just with the community.
Basically, for us, the way we do things, we look at it's bottom-up planning.
Okay, explain that.
We ask the local people what they want, what they feel should be done for them, not us. I was saying, you need this. No, that one we can't work in Uganda now.
Mm-hmm.
Once they participate right out from the beginning, they feel the project is theirs, they feel what they have asked is what they have given them, and they feel they really appreciate.
Yes.
I don't know that you are getting me.
I do get you. It's basically community-led or informed action, right?
Yes,
and exactly. So instead of top-down, meaning someone up high comes and tells you what you should do and what you should need and what you should want or how it should be. They ask you, what do you need? What do you want? How do you think it should be?
And then you advise accordingly.
Okay.
Where you think they are going may be straight, may not have an impact. Then you say, what if we... Oh, they say, okay. That one can work for us.
Yes. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And where is the organization headed, and what's next for you?
Basically, we are looking at continuing with our conservation song and education and sensitization of our communities in terms of conservation, health, awareness generally.
Mm-hmm.
And meeting their demands where possible.
Yes.
Because human demands are many.
Yes, I was going to say they're high, right?
Yes. So many you can't meet.
Yeah.
A human is ever demanding.
Yeah.
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 But basically, we have try to do the little we can manage, and which is beneficial. And it's our overall goal, the objective, to make sure our communities, at least the economic empowerment, they are empowered in terms of education, in terms of health, in terms of conservation, in terms of everything.
Yeah. Do you worry that tourism is, after COVID, you know, is there any worry that tourism, as to build the foundation on tourism, is fragile?
Definitely. That's why we are looking at other alternatives. Agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
So that when people, they get involved in agriculture and they are not looking at only tourism basically, then if there's anything happens with tourism, then they are safe. Mm-hmm. Or they have an alternative source of income, an alternative activity to do. Yeah. Even our staff, we encourage them, when you're working, plant some trees of coffee. Plant some trees of bananas, because everybody wants to eat.
Right. You'll never go wrong with food.
With food. No. Yeah.
Well,
plant coffee, plant tea,
mm-hmm.
such that there are some alternatives. If you are not employed, you have some other source of what? Here, like firewood. We have many factories, we have what? Plant fewer trees.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because someone will always
need it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And do they listen to you?
Yeah, very much.
I know I listen to you when you speak.
Very much. Because when we are in planning meetings and staff meetings, always encourage them, look here, this tourism industry is very fragile. I think we learned from COVID. Some time back, there's an incident which had happened. So, basically, people have come to learn.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, and I think what's really great is at least many of the people I've met look up to you as a mentor, as a role model.
You have not met that Mzee Gongo.
Mm-mm.
He no longer moves a lot, but he's the one who mentored me. I admire him very much. He was a man who was not corrupt. That's one. Two, he is a man who can talk his mind, whether you like him or not. He was a man who was straightforward, would wish to see development in the community. He would actually agitate for his community, and if it means sacrificing his resources, he would do it. So I learned a lot from him.
And do you?
I feel I should do it to other people. When I go, I leave a legacy behind.
Yeah.
You know, it's very bad when you leave someone and when people come, that man. But when you leave a good legacy, and you say, even your son, your daughter can climb on that.
Yeah. People look at them and go, you are the son or the daughter of that person who we really admired and respected.
Yeah. And in African culture, it's like that. People want to leave a legacy behind. But not all people. You have some young boys. This.com.
This.com? Yeah.
It's terrible. I'm telling you. The youth between 35 downwards, they don't know what they want.
Yeah.
They are so confused, I can assure you.
What do you think confuses them the most? Why are they so confused?
The world they have grown up in, and this technology and what, luxury things, they don't know how to go slowly. They want to be rich in one day.
Oh, yeah. And we have the same problem in the United States.
Sure. I thought it's in Uganda here.
No, we have these Instagram influencers, or let me put a video that will make me famous and rich in one day.
Uh-huh.
And without their phone, they don't know who they are.
Exactly.
And
these phones have spoiled them a lot. And you know, instead of concentrating on something very important, just this Facebook, WhatsApp.
Right. Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. I think it's a common problem. Mm. But I think the consequences are more severe.
Sure.
Here.
Mm.
Because you need people's creativity and you need people's ambition and you need their focus.
Mm. Yeah. They're not focused. You know, when you plan very well, you will go slowly and you reach where you want to go. But once you start with a high speed, you can knock when you reach somewhere.
Yes.
In the middle.
So I know in there's Mpola Mpola makes the journey, right?
Exactly.
And what is the, how do you say the whole phrase? Mm-hmm. Like
slowly by slowly.
In Muchiga. How do you say it in Muchiga?
Mpola Mpola nosa kwi kawari kwen.
Okay, so in Italian, we say piano, piano, vai lontano.
Mm-hmm.
So slowly, slowly makes the journey.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we have the same.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been amazed how much there's overlap between some Italian and some... exactly.
Yeah.
What do you hope for your community?
I want to see our community being a model community. Model community with educated people who are free from diseases, a community that is vibrant and very focused, that everyone would admire to live in.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I can say thank you for all that you have welcomed me to be a part of this community.
You're welcome.
Enjoyed the opportunity to get to know you and your family. And I thank you for all the times you helped me. And I also thank you for your time today and sharing your experience your dreams.
You're my good friend, you know.
Same here.
Yeah.
I'm very proud to be your friend.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Webale mononga.
Webale tsima.
Okay.
All right, everybody, that was the show. And as you can tell, there's a lot of mutual affection between myself and Paul. One of the things that came up in the podcast was talking about the poor soils around Bwindi Impenetrable Forest National Park. And this is surprising for many people because rainforests look really lush and as if they support tons of vegetation, and they do. But as we mentioned, the topsoil is very, very thin, and it doesn't take much to have it disappear. And that is what's happening, not just in Uganda, but all over the world. And climate change is only going to make that worse. For Uganda, coffee and tea are important cash crops. And we have to think about how is climate change going to impact not just those cash crops, but the food security in general for the entire population. Next time, I chat with John Kisita, a Mandela Washington Fellow, to talk about climate change and Uganda's future. If you're digging the show, give us a like and please share it with your friends so that they can enjoy the podcast too. You can listen to the podcast anywhere that you like to listen to podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and also on the podcast website, Wild Connection, the podcast, hosted by Podbean, or you can hop on over to my website, jennifervertelin.com, and listen there. Till next time.